Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr., Jim Osarski, your Cincinnati Inquirer, Bengals beat writers from Cincinnati.com, and we are fresh off the combine. We've washed off that combine stank. It's the Indy stank is off of us. We're new. We're officially pushing forward towards the start of the new league year, where everyone starts anew. Isn't it beautiful, the circle of life?
It is. It's a short circle, man.
Yeah, I know. I thought we were off, supposed to be off for a little bit.
Well, it's funny though, because just the way that the playoff game ended, like, people are still talking about it. Like, it's still a thing, and like the fallout's still a thing. And so I guess it's just a weird, it has been a short circle, because it's just, I know, for a team that didn't win a playoff game, they were a hot topic, man.
Yeah, you know, no, there's no doubt about that.
It lingered.
Yeah, there's and well, you throw together two things there. The fact that the season ended the way it did, then you added the news of a suspension that came in the way it did, and then you throw in the fact that they're so in the mix with so many free agents, and their coaching changes that they have. I mean, they've been very newsy in the last few months. I mean, we just for the first time at the combine got to talk to Hugh Jackson a little bit, and I mean, that might arguably be the biggest thing that happened this entire offseason. Not that we didn't know it was going to, but it was, doesn't make it any less the biggest thing that happens. And we were really just able to truly get to him and talk about him in his new role. Now, I mean, talk right to him. I mean, so, and he will affect this team in free agency. You better believe that, because he's going to be tracking some of the former guys.
Oh, definitely. And you know, Paul Gunther kind of joked about that with all of us, but it is a very real concern among the Bengals front office. You know, Duke Tobin said it formally when he met with us that, hey, all of these Bengals coaches, you know, spreading out, one of the reasons they feel strong about re-signing their guys is they know them, right? And they know what they can do and what they can be. You know, there's no, you don't have as much risk as an outside free agent. Well, now all those coaches, Hugh Jackson obviously being the newest, they know the same things, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a legit concern on their end.
And they've always sold to these free agents the idea of, you don't want to go somewhere else. You don't know what that place is going to be like, you know. And they point to Michael Johnson, and they point to TJ Houshmandzadeh back in the day, and these guys that had regrets going somewhere and feeling that the grass was going to be green on the other side, and it wasn't. But what if what you're selling to them is different now, because they can go somewhere else and know what it's going to be a little bit, because they know the coach now. Because they know Vance Joseph, because they know Mike Zimmer and Jay Gruden maybe, and obviously Hugh Jackson. I think that is, you know, and you wrote about this last week, I think that is one of the biggest elements of this free agency period for the Bengals, is they can get bit on what they have told these guys, is that you want to make sure you have comfort. And you want to make sure you have a place that you understand. That's why you should stay here. But all of a sudden, a place that they understand is somewhere else, and that somewhere else might have more money.
Right.
And so when you start talking, when that starts becoming a thing, it gets a little messy. I do want to run down sort of what we want to do in this BBP. We wanted to wait till after the combine, because lots of conversation, lots of behind closed doors meetings are had, and agents start getting in the negotiations a little bit, and all that stuff was happening with the Bengals. So we wanted to make sure we got through that so we could really kind of give you the proper primer for the start of this huge free agency period in the beginning of the new league year. Because, you know, often in these off seasons, we'll say, okay, you know, those few days of the draft are really going to be the most important of the season. That's typically the case. Not this year. These next 2 weeks, really, will be the two defining weeks of this offseason for this franchise as far as where they're at. I mean, they'll add people in the draft, but how right. they are able to handle all of these guys, how many will stay, how many will go, is going to go a long way to telling how urgent what they have to do in the draft is and how realistic the possibility of them picking up where they left off last year is. So we're going to do this. We're going to run through all free agency and what to expect, who we think is going to stay and who is going to go, and how the Bengals are approaching their long list of free agents. We'll get into the draft. You know, it's kind of got our first true look at what this draft is shaping up like with the combine. So a lot of what this draft is going to look like, I think, will affect some of the Bengals' free agency decisions, or at least how willing they are to pay and pursue certain guys that are their own free agents when there's a pretty good chance a deep draft of a certain position can help them backfill into that. You'll hear from Marvin Lewis. You'll hear from Paul Gunther. You'll hear from Bengals director of play personnel, Duke Tobin, who took his turn in the spotlight.
Right.
He got to take the podium in Indy for the first time in his career. Deserved pub for him. So we'll bring you some of what he had to say about sort of the state of the roster and things like that. First, Jim, let's do this. Let's kind of run down the top where the Bengals would start. Oh, also, by the way, I forgot. We're gonna get to some Twitter questions.
Right.
So don't forget that. you were firing us using the hashtag BBP. Continue to do that even if we don't ask you to, please. We love it when you guys send us any questions you have, anything with the hashtag BBP on it. I guarantee you go to the front line. It's the way to get fast tracked to any Twitter Q&A is using the hashtag BBP. So we'll get to those towards the end of the podcast. So let's just start where the Bengals would. Free agency. Where are we at? I think we both have been saying, and it continues to be the case, Marvin Jones is where this free agency period starts, correct?
Oh, without a doubt. He is the premier free agent on the team in terms of talent, upside, age, kind of all that stuff, but also sort of the sweet spot for him, where he is also the, you know, maybe inarguably, I was going to say arguably, Paul, but now that Alshon Jeffrey's been tagged in Chicago, I mean, he to me, inarguably, that right now, as of recording this BBP going forward here this week, the best free agent on the market, in my opinion, you know, as at wide receiver. I mean, he's kind of landed in sort of a vacuum. I mean, the draft isn't as strong at wide receiver, so you know, without a doubt, I think all along we've said he would be kind of the top guy for the Bengals to re-sign, and nothing's changed yet. If anything, that's only been strengthened since the season ended.
Yeah, and the thing that the Bengals have been so good at in recent years is re-signing their own and doing a good job of making sure they nail down their in-house number one priority. Well, that will be tested. I mean, as much as it is their top priority, at a certain point, you just got to say, we still refuse to overpay. And now we have the salary cap set at 155.2 and some change. And so that is it's a couple million dollars more than it originally was thought to be. And I believe we're up $12 million over last year. So that is the possibility. That puts the possibility out there that some team has a little bit more than they thought and has a receiver need, and they are going to pay.
Right.
And they are going to overpay. And you see this every year in free agency, these massive contracts. And you saw it last year, especially when all of a sudden there's $10 million more than there was the previous year, is the willingness for some teams that love to live through free agency to go out there and overpay for the top player at that position that can improve them. Well, Marvin Jones in a regular year, you would probably look at him and say, oh yeah, you'd slate him around what Golden Tate got, what we talked about, you know, this, that's $6 to $7 million range. It'd be a very nice price for him. He's earned it. He's played very well. You know, you put his stats out there. They compare to guys that make that kind of money. But this year can be different because of what you mentioned. He's the number one receiver in the free agent market.
Yeah.
And then you would normally say, oh, well, you know, you can get a receiver in the draft. Well, guess what? Maybe not, because this draft is not what the last two were. And that was backed up at the combine when nobody could run fast in the wide receiver right. class. I mean, you know, you only had four guys that had a 4.43 or better in their 40. Well, you had 11 of those last year. Okay. This is the discrepancy that we're talking about. I mean, so teams are going to freak out maybe and say, we need a receiver. And there's 82. There's Marvin Jones standing right. there with his arms open. You know, just like he does when he scores touchdowns, except he's going to get rained on in cash. he says he wants to hit the market. He wants to see, and you can't blame him. Of course he wants to hit the market. He wants to see if some team's going to overpay for him because of what's happening around him as much as what he's done in his career.
Right. And here's the thing. I don't – and I think astute Bengals fans know this, and even around the league. The Bengals pay fair market value for guys who have that market, you know, at the time.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't doubt that Marvin Jones is going to get between now and the legal tampering period of March 7th, a nice offer from the Bengals. You know, he came out on NFL Network, you know, during Super Bowl week, Paul, when you're out in San Francisco saying, hey, there's no hometown discount. I don't think there has been one, at least in recent history. AJ Green, there was no hometown discount there.
You know, Geno Atkins was made the highest paid defensive tackle right. in football when they paid him.
So, you know, it's all about guaranteed money and upfront and all that kind of, you know, that really nitty gritty of stuff there, Paul. But you're right, though. I think, to me, if you're an NFL player, especially in Marvin Jones specifically, I understand there's inherent risk. Like, you know, the Bengals offer something, you want to wait another couple days to see if something bigger comes in and play that whole dance and you know, I guess you run the risk of maybe not, but this is kind of a once in a career type opportunity for him, especially if he signs like a 4 or 5 year deal, you know, where he's pushing 30 on the next one. It'd be hard. I guess I'd be mildly surprised, Paul, if you know, we're down at Paul Brown Stadium and he has re-signed before at least the legal tampering period where he got a real feel for what it was out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So not to say he still won't get paid. You know, he still may come in with over $7 million a season. But you're right. All things have kind of lined up, and he's in line. You know, and that'd be interesting because then the Bengals would be one of a handful of teams that have two receivers – and some of the top 20, top 25 paid in the league. It just doesn't happen very often.
No, you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I could absolutely see it being March 9th at lunchtime and a deal comes out. You know, the right. Bengals work in deadlines so often. And, you know, if Marvin wants to go see what he can get elsewhere, he has that right, and he will, and he can use the – I'm guaranteeing you the Bengals will say, that's fine. You use that time. But at, you know, 3 o'clock on March 9th, we need an answer one way or the other whether you're taking this. And I fully believe that the Bengals have, and for everything we've talked to, there's much reason to believe they have made aggressive pushes towards Marvin Jones and will. They
right.
plan. They want him. He's their number one priority in the year where they have a lot of guys and a lot of money. They need to make sure that they keep him or Mohamed Sanu. But what will happen is the same thing that happened when Michael Johnson and Carlos Dunlap both met up, and we've talked about this a couple of times. It's contract Thunderdome. It's, listen, here it is. This is a very, very nice offer. It is here for you to take. If you tell us no right now, congratulations, enjoy your life elsewhere, because we're going to go give it to the other guy. That's what happened when Michael Johnson was under the long-term contract negotiation deadline of his franchise tag. That's exactly what happened, is the moment that he said, no, I'm not going to do it, and he moves forward to play the year on the franchise tag, they gave 6 years and $40 million to a young Carlos Dunlap.
Right.
And that's what will happen here. And so everybody that thinks that Mohamed Sanu is gone because he said so, don't understand how this works. Is the Bengals will give a big number to Mohamed Sanu. They will.
Right.
And because they're what the only thing that can't happen over these couple of weeks is that they lose both.
Right.
It's the only thing that they're worried about. I think from where we sit.
Yeah, and I think, Paul, I guess it would be really surprising if they were to lose both men, because, and again, it goes back to how we started this conversation, where the Bengals do pay fair market value, and it would really come down to a dramatic overpay, which is possible. Your beloved Jags got like $60 million available, right? I mean, I guess it's
gotta
possible.
Spend it.
Yeah, so let's not totally discount that element of it, but these guys will get fair market value, and I guess it'll come down to, does Mo Sanu, if it is kind of an either or, does he really feel he'll get, a chance to catch 75, 80 passes in a more sort of traditional number two receiver role in Cincinnati, or if, money being equal, he feels, I may be able to do that elsewhere, so... but again, you only can look off history, especially, when you got this new individual, right? When someone hasn't been through it before, they owe themselves the right to look around. But also, again, the team rarely loses guys, in this modern Bengals era, we'll call it, the last 5-6 years that they've set their sights on. It's just...
you're right.
Yeah, we just might be surprised at the final number, I guess.
Yeah, here's the thing is that if you're Mohamed Sanu and you're sitting there, and on March 8th, the Bengals come to you and say, we will give you exactly the number you're asking for, and Marvin Jones won't be here, that is the grand slam for you. You get to stay where you are, which is a big thing. You have a good quarterback. You have good chemistry. You will be the number two receiver. Okay. So you have a chance to do what, because he wants to go a place where he feels like he can play more and catch all those passes and all that stuff. You're still here with, Dalton and AJ Green and all the people you're with, and you make the money that you want. So the Bengals know that.
Right.
And I think Mohamed Sanu, if he got that, he would be crazy to turn that down. And so the Bengals are going to sit there, and this is the way to play it, I think, because to avoid the only thing that can't happen is you sit there and you offer Marvin Jones the money and you tell him you have to this point. If you say no, we're giving this money to Mohamed Sanu, and he will take it.
Right.
And that's the way it was with Michael Johnson and Carlos Dunlap. Michael's money was way more, and it worked out for both. Michael, definitely for the Bengals. Michael goes and plays 1 year in Tampa Bay, but he got that $43.5 million contract. The Bengals tipped their hat and said, congratulations to you guys.
Right.
Well played. And Carlos Dunlap is sitting back saying life is good with his 6-year, $40 million contract when he hadn't earned anything like that yet. That was above what he probably would have ever expected.
Right.
Because the Bengals knew they couldn't lose both.
Right.
And that's what this is. And that's why I think Mohamed Sanu should be careful talking too publicly about how he doesn't want to come back and all that stuff. Because guess what? You could jeopardize a lot of things that maybe you could have coming your way.
Right. And actually, we just sort of – I know we'll hit some Twitter questions later, but that actually was some of the questions we got specifically about Sanu and him speaking out, and if, he was really that hurt by anything or, angry about anything. I really don't think that's the case. I mean, we never got that impression during the year. I obviously when a team's winning, guys aren't really going to talk too much, but, You're right. You know, that is the one, that is sort of the wild card factor here, Paul, is, again, we're going to talk about history, the past history of Bengals players sort of trying to put Mike Brown in a corner with pay me.
Does not work.
That history is sort of changing a little bit, because while he still has the final say, there's other voices now, I guess. So,
yeah,
you know, and Andrew Whitworth, I guess, you know, none of these guys that we're talking about has the equity of Whit. But, you know, even after last offseason, you know, Whit was pretty vocal, and you know, he's under contract for 2016 now after a one-year extension. So, you know, maybe that was a sign of things to come, where, you know, it's not as cut and dry, I guess, as it was in the past.
No.
But it's still went fairly quiet. Yeah. So it's, yeah. No, you're right, Paul. It'll be interesting. They can't lose two, and I think that benefits both players in the end.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. It does. Because some teams are going to pay these guys. I mean, they've earned it. They're quality players. They're still both young. You know, you're not talking about a couple of 30-year-olds. So it's a little different. I do want to bring in a little bit of some what we heard at the combine. First off, let's bring in Duke Tobin, as we're still talking about free agency and the construction of this roster. This is a good time to do that. A little bit of him talking about free agency, his role in it, and how the Bengals approach re-signing their guys. But not only that, in the idea of re-signing their guys now in a year where there's a lot of their other coaches elsewhere, something that you wrote about earlier this week. But this was the Us, along with a small contingent of reporters, at the NFL Combine, speaking with Bengals Director of Player Personnel, Duke Tobin.
You've got to keep yourself financially viable to retain these guys. So you got to manage the cap well, and Katie's done a tremendous job of keeping that as a key focus, and giving us the ability to sign them. They've got to want to come back. It's a two-way street. And they've got to feel like we're still the best option for them. A lot of guys, when they get their first bite of the apple at the end of their first contract, they want to see what their true value is, or maybe there's something out there that you're unaware of, and maybe you want to look around, and we respect that. But at the same time, you know, every time you sign somebody, there's a little bit less left for the next guy that signs. And so there's an advantage to the players, you know, really talking turkey early and getting their piece of what we have to offer.
Is it tough? Is it hard?
Mentioned the known quantity aspect. In the last handful of years, the coaching tree, if you will, has spread. So the known quantities of your players are now known across the league. Do you think that's different than 5 years ago? Are you curious to see? I mean, is there...
Yeah, so I go out in the dome and I look at where our suite is, and our suite is right in the middle of Cleveland and Washington. So we're going to have to be covering our notes, I guess. I don't know. But it's, I just found it humorous that's right where we are. But yeah, with success gives opportunity to guys who deserve it. And we've had a lot of guys move on and do well. And, you know, Hugh is the latest in that. And yeah, they're naturally gonna want what they know, just like we want what we know. And you know, we'll see what happens. But yeah, it does maybe leave you a little more exposed than you'd otherwise be left.
How do you convince a guy that you are the best option in that sense? Can piggyback on that.
Well, I think they have to be content with, you know, their role that they had this year first, and then they've got to look around and maybe see some examples of guys who did leave and it didn't work out for them, and it wasn't a one-to-one transfer in terms of production or opportunity or, you know, coaching or whatever it is. It wasn't the same, and they've wanted to come back, and Michael Johnson would be a good you know, a good example of that. And so I think it's incumbent upon the guys who are doing this for the first time to really explore with some of the veterans about, you know, is the grass really greener, or, you know, if all things are equal, is it better to stay with what you know?
Is it trying to walk the line of offering a guy but not having him shop the offer, that kind of plays into it too, right? You're trying to kind of...
Oh, there's an art to negotiating, and, you know, and when you're dealing with folks, there's a lot of different styles, but, you know, ultimately it's going to come down to how much, and you know, we'll see if we're in with some of these guys or not. You know, it's like I said, you know, there are guys, and we're open to having almost all of them back, and so if they're open to it, and so we'll be talking, and we'll see what we can fit. I mean, it's not going to be a case where we can fit everybody at the number that they would really like to have. It's just financially not an option. We don't have enough room under the salary cap to do that. So we'll have to make choices as we go, and we've got them prioritized, and we're working through that right now.
All right, so there was Duke Tobin, you know, maybe most underrated personnel man in the NFL, or least discussed. I'm maybe not underrated in NFL circles, but to those outside that don't know.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, what he's done here, and how lucky the Bengals are. I mean, he talked a lot about, you know, why he didn't pursue any other jobs, even though teams wanted to talk to him about being their general manager. He is a guy that wants to be here, and he doesn't want to leave. He sees himself. He comes from a family where you stay and you with an organization. And he said, "We're Cincinnati Bengals. That's what we are." He has no desire to go anywhere, nor will he. And boy, are the Bengals lucky that that's the case.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, people kind of use it maybe sometime as a knock. You know, the Bengals are old school in a lot of ways. But in this instance, that obviously is a huge check mark in the pro box regarding Duke Tobin, because look, I mean, he knows his dad, after leaving Chicago, moved around and it didn't work out as well. You know, it was different things. And you know, in Cincinnati, you know, if you win, you do things the right way, you know, you're going to keep your job. And you can actually put down roots in a business where, let's face it, I mean, some GMs, some coaches are gone within 1 year, 2 years, and you're always sort of chasing the next. And it doesn't help anybody, the teams or the executives. So, obviously it's been working, and you're right, Paul. I mean, I think that was the biggest thing over the week. I don't know about you, but like my Twitter feed and was like, "Hey, that's the first time I've seen the guy." You know what I mean? Like, people didn't see pictures of him or anything like that. So it was, you're right. It was a nice sort of spin around the spotlight, I guess, but, definitely not underrated in NFL circles. And yeah, the Bengals clearly, found a good one. They got him young, you know, got him young, and he's proven to be, you know, you want to talk draft, develop, and retain. I mean, they were in that mode with him this offseason and made sure that they did that.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right about that. He is sort of, along with everybody, the holy trinity there of Troy and Katie together, along with Marvin and Duke, have sort of mastered draft, develop, and retain over the last 5 years or so, and a big reason why they've been where they are. We've gone over what was sort of the most important element, and that's on offense, with Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu, and we'll see how that plays out. But I think, you know, that's where their number one priority is. Now, after that, you know, you start getting into where the Bengals stand. I thought one of the most interesting things to come out of this week at the Combine, both in reading the tea leaves of just the reactions of everybody we've talked to on and off the record about the Bengals secondary, which is basically everyone's up except Drake or Patrick, who's in the last year in his fifth year of his rookie deal, is there was a whole lot of sort of, I don't want to say resigned to the fact, but kind of accepting of the fact that George Iloka is probably going to go elsewhere.
Yeah, it was interesting, Paul. It seemed like, you know, and again, it falls into the category of it's a Bengals sweet spot, right? Drafted, develop, mid-round, late-round guy, you know, starter, 26 years old, that whole thing. But it just seemed like there wasn't a great hope or a yes, for sure, he'll be back. But again, it proves the market. It's like Marvin Jones in a way, you know, and there's only so much money to go around. And I think that safety market, as people have seen, you know, he could wind up with a dollar value that the Bengals just aren't willing to get to.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think they realize, and I think it's a realization that teams are going to be paying big money for safeties. He's amongst one of the best ones out there. And there's a lot of teams interested in George Iloka. And I think he's been getting a lot of very real interest. You know, the latest today came out of our sister paper in Detroit talking about how the Lions are really interested in going after George Iloka. We know Mike Zimmer and the Vikings will be interested in going after George Iloka. And I'm sure there's a number of other teams that would be interested as well. I'm sure Vance Joseph will be keeping a close eye. You know, it's that, and that's just the ones that we know about.
Right.
So, and when you're talking about the safety position, I mean, you just look back in the last year in particular, you're seeing that swing of teams really realizing the importance of that position and what the NFL is now and how it can change everything. I mean, look at Denver. They win the Super Bowl. T.J. Ward was back there, a guy that they paid a lot of money for in free agency. Look at Seattle, the run that they were on. You know, Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas are back there. You're seeing this in teams in that these very good defenses, these Super Bowl winning defenses, have high end safeties back there making plays, and so teams are willing to pay for that.
Right, especially because George isn't a one-way safety. You know, he was asked to play a lot of deep coverage, you know, in the Bengals, but he also loves the hit, right? So, I mean, he's a guy who kind of stick his nose in too. So you're not sort of he's got some versatility where I think teams even that run different secondary schemes can find, because that's part of this too, right? That's always part of the market, right? What kind of guy fits your scheme and your coach, your DC? And I think, you know, his versatility in some areas, you know, will make him attractive as well.
So not only that, but so the opposite of what we were talking about earlier, where you look at receiver and say, oh God, if we don't keep these guys, what are we? This draft is not one where we're just going to always be able to get one. Well, this is a draft, though, on defense where you can go get some guys that can fill in and be immediately a part of your rotation or even a starter.
Right.
You know, particularly on the defensive tackle position, everyone will say that this is clearly the deepest draft you've had for defensive line as a whole and defensive tackle in particular in many years. But in the secondary, too, there's a lot of good safeties. There's a lot of very good cornerbacks. And so if you're looking at that and you say, okay, the obvious what will happen here if George does go elsewhere and the Bengals can't reach a number with him, they'll go to Reggie Nelson. Very similar concept to what we just talked about earlier with Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones. They'll go to Reggie Nelson and say, here you go, Reggie. You're not going to find this elsewhere. You're 32. You know, I mean, there's a certain number where he's going to say, thank you. I'm thrilled to come back. And he does want to come back. You know, Reggie's been very open. He loves Cincinnati. He loves the fact they wanted him in the beginning. The city's been good to him. The team's been good to him. He's been good to it. It's a good fit. If they give him something close to the amount of money that he wants, they'll structure a front-loaded deal, I'm sure, with no dead money in the back end. See Maluga Kamare. It'll be very similar to that. I'm sure he will say, this is great, let's do it. So then you'll have Sean Williams playing next to Reggie Nelson, and you will go into this deep defensive back draft, and you'll pull one out. And that is not a bad option, and a much cheaper option than having to overpay to keep George Iloka around. And I think that is why we are getting this sort of resigned tone from a lot of people that we're talking to.
Right. Yeah. And you're right. That is Sean Williams is the biggest difference there, because they feel, you know, they kind of talked him up a bit at the start of last year. But he played a lot, you know. Reggie, I think, had an ankle late. I think it was a playoff game, and George had some ankles and they did some three safety looks with, you know, Sean Williams kind of playing a hybrid safety linebacker role. I mean, the guy played a lot, and they are ready for him to start. And so in their mind, it can be a one or the other, because they feel they've got a starting safety. You know, they're looking to fill one hole, right, not two, if need be. And you're right, I think that definitely is a huge, huge factor in that, especially, It's all tied together, right? It's all pots of money. We talked about this, you know, rewind it back to September when they re-signed, you know, they extended AJ Green. Mm-hmm. You know, people wondered why there weren't other extensions other than AJ. And it's like, well, you can't really do anything else until the biggest chunk of money is accounted for. So it's it makes sense that, you know, Marvin Jones being a priority, probably the biggest chunk of money, you know, then you kind of work down the line after that and based on need too. Yeah, it's the safety spot is definitely a much position of strength, we'll call it, right? A little negotiation of strength, knowing that they have Sean Williams in-house and ready to play.
Yeah, no, Sean Williams has to play. There's no doubt about that. He's ready to had the biggest play of all of last year for them defensively in the interception at Pittsburgh. So what that takes you to then, I think, is the other priority here, which is Adam Jones. And he's obviously been a source of a lot of controversy due to what happened to him at the end of the Pittsburgh game. But he had such a good season, and the only thing going against him is his age and the idea, you know, when you're negotiating with a guy and you have depreciating returns in his future, you are taking a risk. I mean, people just don't go around paying big money to 30-plus-year-old quarterbacks, and for good reason. But what you've seen is Adam Jones last year played the best football of his career, and he was one of the top corners in the league and shut down some of the best receivers in the league, and what he brings you in the return game. And honestly, what he is in the locker room to a lot of guys is a big help. In, you know, what his past was when it used to be a detriment, now it pays off because he has settled down off the field and uses that. And he's a good teaching point for a lot of young kids that come in that they want to settle down off the field. And he's just at a deeper core of that locker room than most people imagine. And I think that there will be less people willing to pay him because of what happened at the end of the game, outside of those that we talked about that have a better, that really know better of what Adam really is because they dealt with him on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
And that's Mike Zimmer, who brought him before.
Right.
Because he knew him from Dallas and brought him to Cincinnati originally. And, of course, Vance Joseph and Hugh Jackson, who was admittedly a big part of Adam's development, and he'll tell you all about that.
Right.
In overcoming his issues and helping him grow up. So those are three possible landing spots, but I do think that he will be one because he does want to stay in Cincinnati. He does feel loyalty there, and I think the Bengals will throw a pretty good amount of money at him.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, when we've gone through this list, I think we previous junctures, I think we rated it, even going back to the start of last year, right? What was after the AJ Green extension, of course, was, you know, Marvin Jones, George Iloka, Adam Jones, you know, in terms of this group coming up. And I don't think it's changed much since. You're right, Adam Jones, I think, you know, he doesn't have the wear and tear of a full 10-year career. But he is a guy who had another injury this year and wants to keep returning punts and kicks. So you're right. I think there'll be a market, but I think Cincinnati is going to be the place that, you know, they'll pay him fairly. And I think it's just a good fit all the way around. And, you know, and again, I think there's been a reason he's had success in Cincinnati, right, Paul? I mean, you've been around him a few years longer than I have now, but it seems like one of the reasons he's grown like this is because of Marvin Lewis and Cincinnati and the culture in the locker room. You know, Paul, you know, formerly Mike Zimmer's defense, now Paul Gunther's defense. You know what I mean? There's just a lot of those other X factors. Obviously, I guess, you know, if they get to March 7th and someone throws, again, there's always that sort of wild card, but I just don't think you'll get, or he'll get the same sort of like over the top front-loaded offer that maybe Marvin Jones might.
Yeah, you know what? I just think there's too much history and connection between these two teams because of what they've done for each other. And, you know, the Bengals prioritizing him so high as they do. I just think that it's too much, and I think it works out. I wouldn't be surprised if he was the first one signed. If we hear about if that comes, you may be listening to this now, and he may have already signed.
Right.
You know, I mean, I just think to me that's the one that is the easiest to get done, and I think that it will get done, and I think Adam Jones comes back, and you have a rotation of Adam Jones and Dre Kirkpatrick and Darqueze Dennard with Josh Shaw as the fourth spot, and they probably draft somebody. Heck, I wouldn't be shocked if they took somebody in the first round. I mean, because you've got Darqueze, who's going to be, you know, unbelievably going into his third year,
right?
And he hasn't even really made an effect, had an effect yet. And you have Dre Kirkpatrick, who I don't know that they're going to do an extension with, and he possibly could be a free agent next year. And this is a draft with a whole lot of corners, and this team sure as hell loves them some first-round corners. So
yeah, they do.
And it would follow the pattern of Kirkpatrick in 12, Dennard in 14. So in 16, they have to go for another corner, right? And a draft that's deep in them, a lot of speed there. The setup of the an older guy in Adam Jones, it does seem to all kind of make sense how that could happen. And they would, again, continue to stay very, very, very deep at the corner position, which is a cornerstone of these Marvin Lewis, Duke Tobin rosters.
Right, right. No, you're right. It's, and for those maybe wondering, hey, you know, Adam Jones is 32 years old, you know, the difference between him and Reggie Nelson, whatever. I think at corner, especially in Paul Gunther's defense, if you were to project out at the end of the deal, the fact that Adams played nickel, you know, you kind of look at Leon Hall. Now, Leon Hall's younger, but his body arguably is older, if that makes sense. I think there's room there, in this defense for Adam to kind of age with it, if you will. And then you add in the kick return thing. But you're right, and especially, you know, kind of thinking about, you know, what about a draft pick at corner? I mean, Darqueze Dennard, I mean, that's a pretty serious shoulder injury. I mean, he tore everything, you know, in that game against Arizona. And, you know, he feels he'll be ready for camp, but I mean, it's here's a guy who hasn't really been healthy either. You know what I mean? So I think your the train of thought is kind of right on there, Paul. Adam solidifies your starting trio, but of course, adding talent or keeping talent there is something they've done and has worked for them the last handful of years.
You're right. Yeah, I want to go now and bring in Paul Gunther, who we spoke to in a conference room that we almost got locked into inside of the Westin. Spoke with him on Friday morning on the same morning we talked to Marvin Lewis. Ended up 2 45-minute sessions sitting down with those two guys. And a lot of insight there, a lot of storytelling, a lot of that type of stuff. But he did for one part of his session go into how deep this defensive draft is and his view of it, and also talked about a couple of guys in Margus Hunt and Will Clark who may, you know, it's now or never. I mean, you could have said the same thing for Hunt last year. He's only here because he's still under contract right now, I think. And in a draft that's deep in certain positions, the writing could be on the wall for them. And that's kind of interesting, especially when you get into some of the other guys in free agency that we'll talk about. So here's a little bit of Paul Gunther from the Combine talking about this defensive draft.
So how do you, this week, I mean, all the draft experts, we're going to call them, say that this D-line group, D-tackles especially, is really strong. You can find first, second round grades a little later, you know, and so what's your kind of view? I mean, obviously you guys have built inside out, but
I've done a lot of work. Our staff has done a lot, much more work, at least since I've been the coordinator. It's my third year going in. We've done a much more work. I've given those guys, the new guys, a lot of time to get ready for the combine so we get familiar with these college guys. And I can't remember, even when I was getting into the league, I can't remember this many good defensive players in one draft, like all the way across, like good D linemen. There's good linebackers, good DBs. I can't remember, like, you know, usually when you go to the combine, you see like, okay, these 60 linemen are the top, they're the cream of the crop guys. This year, there's a bunch of them. I'm like, where did this come from, you know? And then linebackers, there's usually, hey, there's three guys. These three guys are the top guys. They'll go in the first two rounds. There's a bunch of them. Same thing with the DBs. So,
all the way through the defense.
All the way through. Yeah. Corner, safeties. I'm excited to watch these guys. I'm not big on the 40. I'm not big on the three cone and the brawl. I'm here for the interviews, honestly. I like to go see the guys. I trust the tape. That's why I always go watch the tape. So that's what we've been doing. I told the defensive coaches, go watch tape on these guys, study their games. You know, what they're doing here, this is all rehearsed, you know. The interviews are good. I like the interviews. For me, the nighttime interviews are the best part of it because you get a chance to know the guy. If there's a guy that intrigues you that you're not sure about, hey, spend a little extra time with this guy. Ask him questions. But all the stuff, the three cone, and I mean, somebody can call me next week and say, hey, this is what he ran in the three cone, this is what he ran in the 40, this is what he long jumped, you know? It's all numbers to me.
That's, I guess, kind of bringing this full circle, that's the beauty of Vontaze. You know,
yeah.
Everybody said,
501. Yeah. 501. I told a bunch of those dudes last night, all the coaches I'm talking, hey, you know what Vontaze Burfict ran? He ran 501. Nobody won him.
Yeah.
See, you know, does he play 501? Hell no, he don't play 501.
Sounds like you feel pretty good about your depth.
I do. Because, you know why I feel good about it? I think it's the way we teach it. Honestly, it's like, you know, how I'm coaching the coaches right now is how I taught the players. Like with Haz and Jacob and Kevin to a certain extent. You know, I'm teaching it like I teach it to the players. So the coaches are amazed. Like, man, you got a lot of guys playing a lot of different positions. Nickel, outside linebacker, you know, three technique, end, safety, corner. You got a lot of guys moving around. How do you do all this? How do you teach it all? Well, we teach it like that in the spring. So what I told you guys last year, I teach it in concepts. So the guys get it. So for the players' end of it, it's like, if you understand this,
It seemed like you get big years for Margus and Will.
Yeah.
You got to get something out of them, I would think. Or maybe you were thinking about maybe taking another injury.
Every year's different. Every year's different. And I always said.
Are they busts or are they.
No.
Do you think they need more snaps?
Here's what I would say. First year, you're on a scholarship. Second year, you better show me something. Third year, if you don't do anything, I'm looking to replace you. Period. That's, I mean, with any guy.
Well,
so
Marcus is in his fourth.
There you go. So you answer your own question. So when I'm here, my thing is I want to find the best rush guys. I've always said this. We're always going to draft rushers and cover guys. That's what we're going to do. So, you know, the linebackers and the safeties, we'll find somewhere. We'll make them fit. You know, if there's a big time linebacker early in the draft and he's sitting on our board, then we'll discuss it. But we're gonna draft rushers and corners. So. You know, we got to look at our four rushers right now. I'm saying on the outside, you got Dunlop, you got Johnson, you got Margus, and Will Clark. Wallace is a free agent. So is that package good enough for us to go into 2016? No. I'm always looking to get better. So
you got to upgrade.
We'll see how it goes.
Okay, so we've got a couple of these guys. We don't need to go way deep into all the Bengals free agents. We've done that before. But let me just briefly touch on a couple of guys that we haven't yet. Vinny Ray, who I think that we thought was the lock to come back. Just because of what he's mm-hmm. meant to this team and what he can bring. There's a little thought out there that maybe Vinny Ray did enough in particularly this last season, but even the year before he played a lot of snaps, that some other team may go after him and kind of bring back memories of Dan Scuda, who played in this role as a young guy. A few years back and ended up getting a really nice contract from the 49ers, who saw a lot in him and played a big role in some really good defenses for them. I gave him a 95% chance of return when I originally did this in January. I would take that number down a pretty significant amount right now, just because the more you realize how much teams do respect the job that Vinny Ray has done.
Right, exactly, Paul. And the fact that he, it, you know, I think he's a four, I mean, he's a 4-3 linebacker, which does matter when you're in the free agent market, in my opinion. But he has shown some versatility, some smarts. I mean, he can call a defense. You know, he can play on the, I guess, like the weak side or strong side and cover reasonably well. That's probably his weakest point. But he's, you know, he's smart. He's a good locker room guy. Is healthy, you know, is consistent. And honestly, you know, what, you know, A.J. Hawk, a guy a couple lockers down, that was the, you know, people knocked him for not living up to that number 5 overall pick billing in Green Bay, but always in that pro column while he was a Packer was A.J. Hawk is always available. He is always there. And Vinny Ray is always there. He's there for you. And you know, he's a very, very good special teamer. And I think you're right, Paul. You know, especially teams that have cap room, that have some holes. He's not a star. He's not a guy who, you know, is going to command a massive fortune. But he's not just like a guy, you know, he's not 31. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there's still some room there. You're right, Paul. I think, he may have played himself into some looks from other teams, and it all goes back to available cap room, and nearly every team seems to have some now, right? So
yeah, you're right. Yeah,
people can look at him for sure.
I do think they still work out a deal. Like Vinny Ray can't play for somebody else. He's Vinny Ray. Right? You know? I mean, he's a Bengal. That's who he is.
I think it gets done too, Paul. I really do. But I it's interesting though, because he's, and it's appropriate that you kind of introduced him here. Because there are priorities, and you learn that with this Bengals team. And yeah, they might say to the receivers or to the safeties, it's one or the other. Here's this money, here's that money. Well, you can't really start to spend, you know, if you already got contracts on the table to 3 or 4 other guys, you really can't start signing, in my opinion, other players, if that makes sense. Like the things kind of have to go in order. Maybe I could be wrong. I mean, the Bengals do have a lot of cap space, you know, that will be available. And maybe, you know, Vinny Ray's number can slot in, you know, knowing, hey, what if we sign Marvin Jones and Reggie Nelson or Mo Sanu and George Iloka? Maybe it works anyway. But I think that'll be the interesting thing, Paul, as we get into that deadline crunch of who takes what and when. And at what point do the Bengals say, you know, we still need to get these other guys locked up before they hit free agency?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I think after that, I mean, there's a few guys, you know, Andre Smith, I think we've been over a number of times that these two teams will be moving on from each other. You know, Cedric Oboye, he's probably going to be starting at right tackle next year. And I don't think that's been a secret at all. You know, Eric Winston, I think is going to go on and focus on his NFLPA presidency. We could finally see the end of Brandon Tate. I think we've seen the end of Leon Hall here, probably barring him coming back at some sort of almost veteran minimum type of deal, or proving that he can be healthy. You know, I think after that, you know, those pieces will start to work themselves out. But I don't want to get too much into that minutia yet. We'll have more time to probably talk about them. They'll go later into the free agent season. Let's do this. Let me bring in a little bit of Marv talking about free agents. Just kind of interesting hearing Marvin Lewis talking about how, you know, he always sort of views it through the eyes of these guys. He's so protective of his guys and loves to see them go on. He clearly cares about the team, and he clearly wants the team to be what it is. But he also wants guys, if they have an opportunity to move on, to be able to do so, and that's part of what the NFL system is. He talked a little bit about that in our conversation with him, so I do want to bring in some of Marvin Lewis, just talking about the way free agency is set up and how you have to kind of view this season.
Kind of going back to some of the free agents, something that Duke was mentioning yesterday was roles. The guys have to maybe understand their roles or accept what their roles were, maybe what their roles could be. How much of a impact does that go into players who could be re-signed?
Well, I think that becomes a realization at some point, you know, in a guy's career. you know, and I think for every player that's a little different. So I think that's kind of, you know, hard to judge their expectations. You know, that's why we, you know, spend the time trying to communicate to them from my point of view as the head coach and from their point of view as the player, you know, because, you know, there's very few NFL players, and I don't know how many you want on your football team that are satisfied with being second, you know, as they want an opportunity to showcase and show that they can go out there and be a starter, you know, be a, you know, all the time. So, you know, it takes a guy a little later down the line to realize some of those things.
I mean, you know, kind of piggybacking on what Butch was asking earlier, you guys have a lot of guys who are in that mix, so to speak, where maybe they weren't the A.J. Greens of the team, for example, but they could be maybe somewhere else. I guess what I'm asking is that kind of part of the tough part of talking to
him? Well, that's, you know, again, that's, you know,
it's personal.
Sure. Yeah, that's personal to each guy, and you know, with that comes responsibility, and you know, you got to make sure you're ready and up for that responsibility.
The wide receiver position for me, to see, that's been an interesting one too. You got guys who have had fine careers as number twos, try to strike out on their own, and for whatever reason, it's a scheme, quarterback, which is.
Well, obviously, again, I think it's a position that depends on a lot of other things a lot. You know, it depends on, as you said, quarterback. It depends on the rest of the football team. Scheme is part of it. So, yeah, you know, I don't care how dynamic you are at times in your mind. On Sunday, if I want to keep you from catching a pass, I can keep you from catching a pass. You know, that way. Now, you know, it depends on the rest of, as we said, the rest of the offensive football team and how they're structured and put together.
Okay. Let's do some Twitter questions. What do you say?
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Let's do some Twitter questions. All right. So we've got a few that have come in. Let's start here with Eric S. at Deep Dive Draft. Oh, man, we're going to get a lot of questions from him, I'm guessing, over the next couple of months, which we love Deep Dive Draft people. But it's interesting. Most times this time of year, if someone asked me the other day, when are you going to put out your first mock draft? And in the last 2 years when I've done them, the first one has come out of this week. I've done one after the combine. But I'm not going to this year because you cannot start to assess what the Bengals draft is going to look like until they get through this next week, next week plus, and figure out where their free agents fall, because that is the number one focus right now. And they will react accordingly after that. There's just too many guys. There's too many variables and who's going to stay, who's going to go, and all that type of stuff to say you can predict the draft right now. It would be, it'd be unfair to the integrity that I hold for my mock draft process to not let this happen first. So after that, we will. And that's why we're not going so deep into the draft stuff that came out of this weekend yet. But I will answer your question because we're here to serve the people. He says, in the time-honored tradition of redshirting first rounders, do you think Cincinnati would draft Jalen Smith at 24? Jalen Smith, for those of you who don't know, had a very bad medical week, right. I should say, where it came out that he had nerve damage with an ankle injury, and was predicted to be a very high pick. But now there's a lot of – I'm sure he will fall very far, if not all the way off a lot of draft boards. I'll tell you what, depending on – I mean, they have to trust their medical people at that point.
Yes.
And they clearly did with Cedric Obwehi last year, but that was an ACL, okay? Like, you know what that is. When you start getting into nerve damage in an ankle, I think he falls off a lot of draft boards, and I wouldn't be surprised if he fell off of the Bengals one. If he was still there, maybe in a third round situation, and they had a positive feel for some that he could maybe in a year or two come back, I could maybe see them doing that. But I don't think so.
Yeah, not in the first round. I think because it is the nerve thing. I mean, yeah, Cedric Oubre. I mean, Duke Tobin said it. He was asked that in his spin at the podium, and the phrase he used was Cedric Oubre was not permanently damaged. And you know, ACLs, while there is a failure rate with reconstructions, I mean, they are pretty standard. You know, Jalen Smith, not only was nerve, but there was an LCL, which is a lateral ligament, you know, that affects, I mean, we're talking about a linebacker here. Mm-hmm. And then yes, the nerve damage for sure. And people, the only comp, I guess, is look at Peyton Manning and just how long it took him to get, I mean, he still couldn't feel his fingers, right? I mean, in some instances. So, I mean, that nerve thing is really scary. I don't think at 24, that fits, right? I mean, maybe if he didn't have the nerve, I might say, yeah, right? Because he was like right. Top five, top 10 pick. You say, well, it's ligament damage. We kind of can predict this. But the nerve thing is really scary. I guess they'll see in a month. They've got a little while to really, if they're interested in him, to check him out again. But you're right, Paul. I think at that specific spot for this question from at Deep Dive Draft, I think it's just too high. Even for a team like the Bengals.
Yeah, I would agree with that. This next question is from Dr. Randy Mallerwine at R. Mallerwine. He asks if he says, BBP, what are your thoughts on the Bengals signing James Laurinaitis paired with Tez? Could be deadly. I've gotten this, and I know you have a lot.
Yeah.
And we're just starting the season of, hey, as soon as – that's how I always know that a guy has been cut is because I have 14 questions about him in my mentions, more so than anything. I don't think so. I think that they – A.J. Hawk is already kind of that guy, and I don't know that James Laurinaitis – first of all, they don't like to bring in – free agents that they're going to have to pay a lot from other teams.
Right.
And I think Laurinaitis still might get a little bit of cash. More than AJ Hawk got, I can say that much, or is getting this year. So I think that for that position, I think they would stay with him. I think they'd rather continue to churn within rather than bring in an outside piece that they don't quite know about, particularly one that's getting older. I think if you're bringing somebody who's going to be older, he's going to be a backup, much like Hawk was. So I would be surprised if they did that. And I think another team will pick him up, you know, while the Bengals are doing their thing with their own, trying to get their own guys straight. In my opinion, unless he sticks around and doesn't find a team and his price comes down and he becomes a cheaper guy, maybe they would go for that move. I just don't see it.
Right, yeah, Paul, you're right. I think that's the thing. I mean, I get it. You know, Ohio State, all those connections. Look, he's going to turn 30 this year, just from a football perspective. Here's a linebacker who's going to turn 30. He's durable. He's played 112 games. He hasn't missed one since he started, which, again, kind of fits that A.J. Hawk mold. But, you know, he's going into his eighth year again. Yeah, it's just, you're right, Paul. Maybe if we're into the second week of full free agency, I would say just no. I think there'll be enough of a market for him in that tampering period still, or even in that first day of free agency where, you know, the Bengals are trying to do what they got to do with guys they're familiar with, that he might not even be an option. First blush was no. I think they'd rather have Vinnie Ray and back and go from there.
Yeah, yeah. This one from Atmo Bengals. Is the radio silence around Bengals free agent activity because nothing is happening, or is it happening quietly? The previous radio silence is because nothing was happening before the combine. They weren't going to engage really much in conversations with their guys until then. And, you know, now, especially now that the salary cap is set, they can feel a little bit more free to go forward with that and have the combine. I think this week will be, you'll start to hear more. I think you'll see one or two guys that will sign probably definitely before the ninth. That's been the tradition anyway. So we'll see how that goes. But I, you know, I, it's, I don't think it's because anything is afoot. I think it's just, you know, they're doing their business under the radar as they like to. They prefer all of it stay out of the public.
Yeah, you're right on, Paul. I think pre-combine, it just was, that was it. Yeah, you know, we're waiting. You know, I think we wrote that Cincinnati.com where the team, while they had an idea for the cap, I mean, all those ideas were changed. I mean, the cap went up, you know, nearly $2 million more than anyone really projected. And while some people may say, well, it's $2 million. Well, guess what? $2 million is AJ Hawk. So, I mean, you can get a player on your 53 man, your 46 for that amount of money. So, I mean, that matters. So I get it. But you're right. I think now things are happening and any radio silence, if you will, or whatever is by design. And obviously we'll do what we can for you, you know, listen in, you know, on the, anybody, the truckers still listen to CB radio? Can you still like pirate that stuff?
Yeah.
On a beat, yeah, no, you know, so I guess we're going
to
do that.
The overnight trucker network, man. Well, that's what we need to do. I'm actually, you know what, Jim, I think we should just as a group decide that yes, what you're going to do now is instead of watching Law and Order marathons in the middle of the night, you are reserved to listen to the trucker network and see if anybody on there is relaying what they've heard talking to agents at truck stops.
Hey, I think that's the answer. Know. You never know.
Hey, stories have been broken in more ridiculous places right. than that. let's go one or two more here, and then we got to get out of here. So any chance they keep both Iloka and Marvin Jones from John Engel? We went into a lot of that earlier. I don't think so. I mean, there's a chance. Sure, there's a chance. I would think that one or both of their numbers would probably have to come down to a more reasonable spot, but we went a lot into that later, so I won't go too much more into that. From Mike Petch, from I'm the MDP, outside of Andre Smith, are there any free agents they won't even make an effort to retain? I'm sure there's some. I guess we could go through that list a little bit.
Yeah, while we kind of look that up, Andre, put it this way. If Andre Smith was still sitting there on March 30th, you know, they'd be like, they'd probably give him a call. Say, hey, you know, buddy, but obviously that's not going to happen. They have a list, a priority list. And when you say, you know, won't even bother with, I don't know, you know, I think it's all relative to that, right? I mean, you know, if Marvin Jones and Mo Sanu walk away, and it's the end of March, and you need a veteran receiver you're familiar with, you know, maybe you start the BT train all over again. You know what I mean? So, like, I it's a little – maybe what he means is in this two-week period, right? And in that case, I'm sure there's a few. I would think, you know, I would think, you know, a guy like Brandon Thompson or even Wallace Gilberry a little lower on the priority list. But, Andre Smith's the only one that seems ready to – they seem ready to just break with because, A, Andre Smith's going to get a starting job and a big contract elsewhere, and the Bengals have the heir apparent on their roster ready to go.
Two of them. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. I think that – I don't think it's a matter of them not making an effort. I think it's they will let those guys know where they value them. And some of them won't like that.
Right.
And some of them will clearly be able to go get more elsewhere. I'm sure they'll go to Wallace Gilberry and say, listen, we drafted Marcus Hardison last year, and whether you like it or not, that hurts your value. You're 31. You've played 8 years. You've been a rotational guy. We appreciate it. But we can get one at a rookie, you know, fourth-round pick cost. There's a difference there, and so we'd be willing to pay you a veteran minimum, maybe, or whatever, to come back if you wanted to. And they're going to say where you can shove that, I'm sure, most of the time. But that's all they can do is be honest of where they find their evaluation at. Let's do one final question from Jason Wheeler, Jason New 6. How high would they go to bring back Marvin Jones if another team goes hard after him? He's a third guy here, number one elsewhere, question mark. Yeah, you know, I think that how high, what exactly that contract looks like, I don't know. I don't think they would go more than Golden Tate money. I don't think that they'd be because of what you are talking about. I mean, it is. It's AJ Green. It's Tyler Eifert. And then who's the next guy? And if he starts wanting more than Golden Tate money, they give it to Mohamed Sanu.
Right. Yeah. It is really interesting, Paul, because I mean, you heard this too a little bit, where it's like, oh well, the Marvin Jones is the one guy. You know, if other former coaches go hard after him, you know, he's the one guy that the Bengals will kind of open the purse strings for a little bit, and I guess, you know, we'll have to see it to believe it. It's hard to say a number with the cap being what it is, because you're right, Golden Tate, I still think he'll end up in that $7 million range, Paul, which is a pretty good deal for all the reasons you just mentioned there. You know, it sort of slots him above some others, and, you know, maybe it's a little more than seven, but it's, you know, is that overpaying? I don't know, because the cap's gone up.
It's overpaying for the Bengals, right, is the point.
Yeah, right.
And it's all percentages, but, right, you know, they're paying AJ Green a giant chunk. So to go and give Marvin Jones, say, $8-9 million, they can only pay so much really realistically to each position.
Right.
And I, there, you know, when you're paying AJ Green, when you're paying him, it's hard to justify going that high, especially when you know you can get Mohamed Sanu for less than that, for five or something. You know, so why it seems the value there is at that point in paying Sanu and allocating that extra money elsewhere. You know, it's just, in my opinion, I think that's the way that they view it, which my opinion couldn't mean less. All that matters is what they think. And that's, I think, realistically the way that they view it.
Right. Yeah. No, it'll, honestly, it's the way we started this BBP. It seems appropriate to end it that way, where it's just like Marvin Jones is sort of this, you know, couldn't be happier for him and his family. I mean, in the sense that he landed in that free agent sweet spot, right? You know,
yep, that's
the
it.
Guy, he loves a smile anyway, and I think he'll, regardless of where he is, I don't think that grin's going anywhere anytime soon, because it's just a matter of whether that smile stays in Cincinnati, because it's he'll get paid.
Agreed. Sure. Life is good. Hey, life is good for both Bengals receivers. Congrats go out to Mohamed Sanu, who got engaged at the, I believe it was the FA Cup final he was at Wembley Stadium. And just, I believe it, like, in minute 55, decided just to get down on a knee. So, hey, good for him. Mohamed Sanu's about to be rich, and he's got his lady, and he he's got his first kid now. Life is just, I'm telling you, it's so funny, because, you know, people talk about, you know, getting a receiver and drafting them. And, you know, the Bengals in 2012 in the third round took Mohamed Sanu, and in the fifth round took Marvin Jones. It can happen, and they've proven to be pretty good at finding guys like that. And I think we'll probably see something that again this year, and they'll try to do the same thing they did with those guys and try to develop them up through a system. And it's a lot easier to do that when you're not counting them in to come in and be number one.
Right.
So as long as you got 18, I think it's a little easier to digest the concept of losing one of those two guys.
Yes.
But hey, they're doing good. Don't feel bad for Marvin Jones or Mohamed Sanu right now, because life is great. Life won't be as great for us, because this period is insane to try to cover. It is. I mean, what will happen on not just Twitter, but really in the world, over the course of once 4 p.m. on March 9th happens, it's going to be insane, as all the deals and trades and cuts and everything else will happen all in a flurry. So we will do our best, of course, to stay all over it. Keep checking Cincinnati.com. Keep checking. Make sure you have that Bengals app, because you never really know when news is going to happen as much anymore, but we will push the important stuff. We'll push alert it to you. Make sure you turn on your push notifications, because when there is important breaking news, we will send that right to you. So make sure you get that Bengals app and put it on your phone, because this is the time of year you're going to need it. But we're all over it for you. So keep checking back. And, of course, we will have a BBP wrapping up this first week, the first week of free agency, as soon as, you know, all the main pieces start to fall one way or the other, and recap where everything is at. So I hope we set the stage. I hope people feel that we coddled their needs for Bengals news and true free agency primer. I think we did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I agree.
But now, so there's lots of songs about money out there, Jim.
Yeah.
So it's really just a matter of us picking one. Do you have a favorite song about money?
Do I have a favorite song about money?
Yeah.
You know what? I like having fun, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like having fun with my money.
Yeah.
Which means I like to take my like 12 singles that I always have in my pocket, which is a lot because I never have cash, by the way. But like if I do have like 12, I like to throw it in the air. So I like Got Money. Lil Wayne, Wheezy, Got Money. I don't have as much as those guys, but
it's no,
fun, right? It's fun. It's, so I like it, to have fun with my money.
It's far less sad when you make it rain $3.
Right.
Or more, so I should say. Yeah, it's not quite as impressive. But you know what? We can still pretend and we can still play the song for you. We can all listen, whether it's NFL players or people like Wheezy and any artists out there, we're all just living vicariously through them,
yes,
aren't we? I mean,
yes.
I hope that we're not really living those types of lives at our house. We're not rolling around in James Wilder's Instagram whips. Okay, we don't have that kind of role, you know, or buying the Lambo with the butterfly doors for $550K like Vontaze Burfict did after he got his contract. Right. We can't roll like that. we can watch from afar and enjoy the music. I think that's what we're gonna do. So anyway, keep checking cincinnati.com. Make sure you get that Bengals app. We'll have another VP coming at you soon. We'll talk to you later.
Young Wayne on the move, hey, Mr. Mickey, Wayne on the move, yeah.